Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 21st of August. Within the past month, we've done shows on great companies in which to work, terrible places in which to work, and this hour, because many listeners suggested this, we're going to be talking about worker cooperatives. It's a movement to create an economic alternative for people who need good jobs. And there are quite a few of these in the country. They're very interesting. There are 300 Democratic workplaces in the country. They employ over 3,500 people and generate over $400 million in annual revenues. They have grown steadily over the last 20 years, and we're going to be talking about them this hour of the program. You'll find some right here in the state of Wisconsin, and we'll talk about those in the state of Wisconsin. We'll have several guests with us. Rebecca Kemble is joining us from our Madison studios, president of the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives and president of the Worker Cooperative Sector of the International Cooperative Alliance. John Conwell will be joining us with one of these cooperatives, Mad Work, and we'll also be speaking with Gibson Caldwell, who's a spokesperson for the River West Cooperative Alliance, which is based here in the city of Milwaukee. Rebecca Kemble joining us now. She's also president of Union Cab Cooperative of Madison and, as I said, is on the board of directors of the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives. She's a founding member and editor at Wisconsin Citizens Media Cooperative and has a Ph.D. in anthropology from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Rebecca, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, thank you. And there's a couple of mistakes. I'm not the president of Union Cab. Paul Biddorf is. I'm just a worker owner. I've been there for 13 years. And I'm the president of a regional part of the International Worker Co-ops organization. I'm not the president of the worldwide. I just sit on the executive committee of that.
Okay. So let's talk about worker cooperatives. What exactly are they?
Worker cooperatives are business enterprises that are owned and run by the workers. Simply as that. And they're part of we're the smallest sector in the whole world of cooperatives. According to the International Cooperative Alliance, there are over 1 billion cooperative members worldwide. And if you are a member of a credit union, you're one of them. If you get your energy from a rural electric co-op or a rural telephone co-op, you're one of those 1 billion. So generally, a cooperative is the internationally recognized definition of a cooperative is an autonomous association of persons united voluntarily to meet their common economic, social, and cultural needs and aspirations through a jointly owned and democratically controlled enterprise. So, for example, there are consumer cooperatives like food co-ops where the consumers are members and owners of the business, but the workers aren't necessarily. There are financial co-ops, which are credit unions. There are insurance co-ops, so any insurance company that has the name Mutual in it is a cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Benjamin Franklin started the first cooperative in this country in Philadelphia.
Oh, that Ben, he was quite a guy.
Yeah, he started a first insurance mutual. But worker cooperatives are a sort of a subset of that. And the common need that we're meeting is the need to be productive human beings in society and the need for work and mm-hmm. jobs. So worker co-ops are owned and run by the workers. And we make our decisions according to, you know, internationally recognized cooperative values, which do not place profit first.
And they're growing in number. Is that fair to say in this
Absolutely.
Country?
In this country and worldwide, yep.
And is it common, is it a prerequisite, really, of a co-op that you have to have a buy-in, a certain amount of money when you begin working at a co-op?
Yep, that's the third cooperative principle is member economic participation. So that means you are an equal co-owner of the business. And some co-ops have steeper or, you know, higher or lower buy-in depending on how the business is capitalized and financed to begin with. That's the member economic participation and the democratic member control are really keys to making these businesses work.
And if the business makes, you don't really call it a profit. It's called a surplus at the
Correct.
End of a year.
Yep.
And go ahead.
And by law, the problem we face a big problem in the United States in that we don't have a national cooperative law to enable co-ops to exist in every state. So these are done state by state.
Oh.
And in the upper Midwest, we're very, very lucky. This is where the co-op movement started in Wisconsin and Minnesota. So we have very good laws, including worker co-op laws. But by law, in our state, for example, at least 15% of that surplus has to be invested back in the co-op in each member's name. So that's equity that each individual member is building every year in the co-op, that percentage of the surplus. And the board of directors, the democratically elected board of directors, decides, are we going to reinvest 15% of our surplus or 50%? And members have a say in that. So every year we decide what percentage is reinvested and what percentage gets paid out as patronage dividends to members, and those get paid out not based on your salary, but based on the number of hours that you worked that year.
And why is it that Minnesota and Wisconsin seem to be ahead of the game on this?
Because back in the 19th century, we started the farmer co-ops.
Ah.
People in the rural areas, I believe in Dane County had the first grain elevator co-op where farmers joined together to make transportation services for themselves and built a grain elevator. And so throughout the Midwest, I believe that the Finns had a history of cooperation, and in the Nordic countries, they brought those traditions with them. So we're very lucky here to have that deep history.
What would you say if you look at a traditional business in America and if you look at a worker cooperative? You've already, obviously, some of the differences are pretty striking here, but what strikes you as most striking, because you've, I'm sure, had the experience of working under both kinds of work conditions?
Yep, I have. Well, it's fundamental. It's in regular corporations, the highest value and priority is returning value to the investors or to the owners.
Mm-hmm.
And financial, strictly financial profit return to the owners. In cooperatives, all of the return goes to the members, and the members get to define what that value is. So we might decide it's more important to us to keep jobs than to lay people off. So we might decide, Union Cab, we took a slight pay cut. We've taken different pay cuts over the years just so everyone could keep their jobs, because that's more important to us than maximizing our profit from quarter to quarter. So the ramifications of that one thing really spread throughout the businesses. So, for example, at Union Cab, our highest paid, the ratio of the highest paid worker to the lowest paid worker is 2 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
When in many corporations in this country, I think it's like 300 to 1, where CEOs are making 300 times what an average worker is making. Even in the largest worker cooperative conglomeration of worker cooperatives exists in northern Spain, and they have, you know, they employ 85,000 people, have billions
Ooh,
and billions.
My goodness.
They're the seventh largest corporation in the whole country of Spain. And what they are a cooperative of cooperative businesses. And the, even their highest pay, their ratio of CEO to worker is one business has 9 to 1, and that's their credit union, their bank. But the average is 5 to 1. So that the CEO makes 5 times as much as the lowest paid entry worker. And that's just unheard of in regular capitalist businesses.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about deciding what's important to you, it might be keeping jobs rather than laying people off so you have a cut in pay. How do you make decisions about what is important to you? How do you decide what's important?
We decide that either through our representatives on the board of directors or through member meetings. For example, let me give you an example of recently Governor Doyle started the wheels rolling of privatizing how medical assistance transportation gets brokered in the state. So it used to be that counties, through their social human services, would broker rides of people who are on Medicare to their doctors. And we, Union Cab and other transportation companies in Dane County had contracts with the county to provide the service. Well, in 2010, Governor Doyle started this ball rolling of farming this service out to a company called Logisticare. And in 2011, that kicked in. Our business manager, our general manager at the time, recommended that we sign this contract because at the time about 25% of our business was doing these medical transportation rides. Even though the contract terms were below market rate, they were going to require all of our members to do drug testing. They were horrible terms of the contract. But he said, you know, it's best for the co-op if we maintain this business, let's sign the contract. Well, some of our members said, no, our own autonomy and our control over our working conditions is more important to us than signing this lowball contract. They called a member meeting, and they directed the general manager not to sign the contract and instead to invite LogistiCare to sign on as an account with us on our terms. And that was based on values. And we decided, you know, as members, we will try to drum up business elsewhere. We'll hit the airport harder. We'll hit the hotels harder. We'll look for other ways of drumming up business. Well, so this didn't only help us in the long run. It also helped the entire industry in Dane County because Madison Taxi also decided not to sign the contract. Badger Cab, I believe, did sign the contract, but within 6 hours of the contract starting, they backed out because it was just a nightmare. So we were able to raise the working standards for the whole industry, even for those taxi drivers who weren't part of a co-op, based on our values and our member decision-making process.
Interesting. What about those people who voted the other way, though? How do you soothe those differences?
There weren't that many people who voted the other way. And it was really the manager doing what he thought was best for the co-op financially, but he was directed by the membership not to. Those differences do exist. And you know, the heart of a cooperative is the creative human being in relationship to other human beings. So the heart of all of our businesses are our relationships. And as humans, we have vast differences of opinions. We have vast political differences. But what we come together on is our cooperative values and what we think is good for the business. And we have very heated and long and drawn out discussions. I mean, Union Cab has 220 members, some of whom have been there for 33 years.
Whoa.
Since the co-op started.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and some of whom, you know, are new. And so we do have these discussions, but as difficult as they may be, they deepen our relationships with each other, and they help us be better people and be better business owners and be better workers in the end.
Some of the literature on worker cooperatives say that they tend to create long-term stable jobs. What you just said may indicate that 33 years, that's a long period of time. Is that true of a lot of worker cooperatives? Do they have staying power, and what are the benefits to the workers? In terms of stability.
Yeah, they do have staying power. There's some startups, if they can't get their relationships with each other right, they'll die a natural death because the people just can't cooperate to run a business. But once you go through that kind of conflict with coworkers and with, you know, some people we call each other life partners because we kind of are in this for life. Like, I didn't start driving a taxi because I always wanted to be a taxi driver. It was a transitional job. I was taking a job at the university. But the co-op part drew me in, and I've been there for 13 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Because of the idea, I feel like the future of our economy, if we're going to survive, human beings are going to survive, you know, in this economy where finance capital has really destroyed so much of the commons. We've got to find another way to organize production and to organize work. And I felt it was so important to learn more, to participate more, and to really spread the news of that there is another way of doing things. I'm sorry I didn't answer your question, which I forgot what it was.
It's okay. It just led to another yeah. comment that I was thinking yeah. as you were talking. You have this PhD in anthropology, and I was thinking that the work that you do, you know, PhD in anthropology, you can use that in conversations that you have every day driving, I'll bet, huh?
Absolutely. It's well, I didn't actually finish my dissertation. I'm ABD. But yeah, I mean, I studied human culture and human history and politics. And I just, driving a cab, you do not get to choose who you interact with. And so you get to see a whole range of people and get into all kinds of interesting discussions. So, yeah.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and we'll also introduce more guests as we continue our conversation. We're talking about worker cooperatives. We did these shows, about a month ago, maybe a little more than that, on hourly workers who were asking for much larger raises, hourly workers who have terrible working conditions, people who have terrible working conditions. Then we looked at some of the best companies in which to work, particularly for working mothers. And several of our listeners said, well, why don't you do a program on worker cooperatives? I didn't realize that that Wisconsin and Minnesota have a special place in history with worker cooperatives. So it's good we're doing this show. We have our guest with us, who is with the Union Cab Cooperative of Madison, is on the board of this national group, the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives. John Conowell will be joining us momentarily, a spokesperson for MadWork, and Gibson Caldwell, a spokesperson for the River West Cooperative Alliance, which is based here in Milwaukee. Phone number, join us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. What do you think? Do we all need to have jobs like this? How different are these from regular businesses? Is it a model that you can see happening much more widely in the United States, or are we really wedded to a whole different system? How do they evaluate their success? We'll ask that as well. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We had two more guests to our show. Our number is 800-486-8655. Actually, we're going to add an unknown number because you'll be joining our conversation. Joining us by phone is John Conowell, who's a spokesperson for MadWork. And these are a number of cooperatives that exist in the Madison area. We'll hear a little bit about them from John. John, hi. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
How many members do you represent? How many groups are there?
Right now, there's 12 worker cooperatives in Madison and around the Madison area. So we represent all 12 of those.
And what does that mean, you represent them?
Well, so MadWork it's short for Madison Worker Cooperatives. We have a three-piece mission. One is to provide education to the community about worker cooperatives. A more educated community thus hopefully decides to purchase cooperatively, right? So instead of getting into a non-cooperative cab, you choose a union cab because we're a cooperative. So by doing outreach, we're essentially hopefully creating business and awareness for the cooperatives. And we also we help start cooperatives. So when we started, there were six cooperatives in Madison. And so the concept there is with more cooperatives, it thus creates more of an image for cooperatives and brings more business. Then we also do support services for existing cooperatives. So right now I'm working with one of the cooperatives in town, just helping them come up with policy to help direct their manager and what their jobs are supposed to be, direct the board and what their responsibilities are. So we can provide ongoing services for cooperatives.
Also joining us in our studio in Milwaukee is Gibson Caldwell, who's a spokesperson for the River West Cooperative Alliance based here in Milwaukee. And thank you, Gibson, very much for being with us. Are there a lot of cooperatives in Milwaukee in the River West area?
There's an increasing number of cooperatives in Milwaukee and within River West. I believe currently there's probably about 10 to 12
cooperatives. Oh, my goodness, really?
In Milwaukee as a whole. And we have five or six going out of based out of the River West neighborhood.
You also have a business that's a cooperative, right?
We do. It's similar to MadWorks and what Rebecca Kimball was describing, we are a cooperative of cooperatives. So right now, the River West Cooperative Alliance has six member cooperatives who are some consumer co-ops, one worker co-op.
Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this?
For a lot of the reasons that have already been described, to empower people to have economic decision-making and to prioritize workers and dignity over profits.
Mm-hmm. Same question to you. I would imagine a somewhat similar answer. John?
I guess first motivation is I was similar to Rebecca. When I came to Union Cab, I had never worked in a democratic workplace, and I have a hard time imagining working in a non-cooperative environment now. Because cooperatives are value-based organizations based on cooperative principles instead of just profit and growth, which lots of businesses are, we become a integral part of the communities in which we live. So by creating cooperatives, I believe I'm creating cornerstone businesses and thus keeping the community strong.
Mm-hmm. Well, they may be growing, but when you look at America as a whole, the movements that you're all a part of are really very, very small. Why aren't there a whole lot more cooperatives? John?
Well, mostly just because of awareness, I think. Right now, it's a really exciting time with the Wall Street crash back in 2008. The Occupy Wall Street movement brought the concept of democratic decision making to kind of a public level. People started talking about consensus decision making, and so we had the economic motivators that have also then driven interest within the city. So last year, the city of Madison helped support economic cooperative conference for growing the cooperative economy in Madison. So
mm-hmm.
It's really just that it hasn't been out there in front of people enough to really get broad education. But now what we're seeing is with these cooperatives, like Madison Worker Cooperatives in River West, and in Madison here, we've created a new network that's a cooperative, will soon be a cooperative, of all the cooperatives within Dane County. So GHC, Group Health Cooperative, bringing in Willie Street Co-op. So not just being with worker cooperatives, but by connecting all of those, all of a sudden we're increasing the public image. We can do marketing. We can do branding for cooperatives. So really getting it out into the public's eye.
Right. Gibson, what's the difference between you're working with a cooperative and going to a 9-to-5 job or 5-to-12 job? I'm sure you've worked those kinds of jobs. Is there a substantial basic difference?
Yeah, it is quite substantial. The biggest difference between working a regular job and working at a cooperative is it is a bit of a lifestyle when you are committed to a co-op. You do take your work home with you. Like Rebecca described, there are some almost family-like dynamics that exist within these. And it's a part of, and we also use consensus decision-making and try and be as democratic as possible. And it's a really different feel to not have a boss to point your finger at, but to have to look in the mirror.
Oh, that's an interesting description. Rebecca, how about you?
Yeah, I just want to address the question, why aren't there more co-ops? And it's true that the public isn't aware of it, but the deeper issue is our culture and our legal structures don't really allow for them, literally in some states. And our culture of based on, competition is such a high value in our culture.
Sure is.
And, getting ahead and, climbing the ladder and all of these things that we're taught as Americans are sort of anathema in cooperatives. But necessity with the collapse of all of these structures that are based on those values is going to make us grow. I want to mention that at the national level, Congressman Chaka Fattah is sponsoring a piece of legislation called the Creation of Jobs Through Cooperatives Act, H.R. 2437, and we're hoping that will get past this session, and that would provide a nationwide sort of cooperative development financing and legal structure to help folks on the ground develop new co-op businesses.
Mm. How do you decide how much everybody's going to be paid?
I think it varies from co-op to co-op. Worker-owned co-ops, it's going to be done by the workers themselves in a democratic fashion. Consumer co-ops, it's usually set by the board of directors or some level of management that's also accountable to the members of the cooperatives.
And does that process go fairly easily, John?
It really depends on what the group is. I mean, Union Cab is a 230-member organization, I believe, right now. So we have a 9-member board that represents 200 people, so there's potential for people's voices not thinking they're heard or maybe not being heard in large bodies. But smaller bodies that, like Rebecca had said, have successfully learned to communicate with each other, that it can happen very smooth, and it's fun, generally.
Good. Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them coming in already. 800-486-8655, our number. Paul in Stoughton, hi.
Well, good afternoon, Kathleen. This is actually Paul Bidorf, president of Union Cab.
Oh.
And I'm calling in because I wanted to join your conversation, if I could, for a minute.
Sure.
And address some of the issues you've asked about. We actually have a board meeting this afternoon, which is a great example of how members can participate. Our board meetings aren't closed to our member owners. Anybody can come at the beginning and make an announcement, and sometimes those things actually lead to changes in our agenda for the meeting. As president, I have to make myself available to the membership, and I believe it was Tuesday, I met with at least 15 different members throughout the course of my day, just so that I could address their issues with how the company was being run. And as to the wages, I think it's interesting that when I'm actively employed as board president, I actually make less than when I'm working as a dispatcher in the dispatch office. So,
how did that happen?
It's just the way our pay structure goes.
Huh.
My administrative wage is lower than my dispatching wage.
Huh. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, I think so. Because I can always, if I didn't want to be president, I could always not be on the board and go make more money elsewhere. So,
what if you wanted a raise?
I'd have to go through the board of directors to get it.
Hmm.
So they'd have to vote to approve me for a raise.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they probably need the support of the membership to do that too.
So tell me, what is your, when you look at other kinds of employment and working with a worker cooperative, the huge differences and the more satisfying nature of the cooperative would be what?
There's nothing that's extremely formal. I don't have to wear a suit and a tie, for instance, unless I'm doing public relations work or going to a press conference or something like that, or a meeting to negotiate a contract, for instance. But just around the general workplace, it's much more relaxed, and our managers have open doors. People can come and talk to them about issues that are important to them. There's actually more leeway in you know, just general workplace behavior. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. But I think it makes everybody more relaxed, and it also, as Rebecca alluded to, it makes more of a family atmosphere. Because if you have a business that everybody has a stake in, that raises the level of pride that people take in their work. A lot of times when you ask a Union Cab driver who owns the company, they'll probably look at you and say, well, I do. And they'll tell you about the history of the company if you have that much patience to listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any comments for each other? I feel like I have to run this in a democratic fashion. Gibson, do you have anything you'd like to say? Well,
I think something that Paul just touched on that is also unique to cooperatives is the degree of transparency for all of the members, for all of the people who are participating in the co-op. There's not decision-making behind closed doors in cooperatives. And financially, there's also transparency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is a good thing. Rebecca?
Behind closed doors, because it's not that it doesn't happen, but people find out about it, and you catch hell. So, because we're people. And another, but a positive aspect of everyone's a member, everyone's an owner, that means if you have all of these business owners, all of those people have relationships, have ideas about how to grow the business. And so you're actually tapping into the genius of everyone, which, you know, Paul said, we have leeway for member behavior. We don't have a strict code that, you know, one human resource person says you have to follow this code. And yeah, it makes it a little more difficult, but it also opens up wide opportunities for the business to be creative in how it grows.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm going to thank you, Paul, for calling in. We're going to move to some other phone lines, but thank you. Have a good meeting this afternoon.
Oh, thank you very much, and thank you for this program. I hope you do more like it in the future.
All right, thanks. Let's go to Wayne calling from San Francisco. Hi, Wayne.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a few comments, just a little background. I'm a Wisconsin native, grew up in northwestern Wisconsin on a dairy farm. And my father, in the 50s, was one of the as you would say, instigators and board members, et cetera, in organizing a milk-producing cooperative there. I think the primary reason was they were concerned about price manipulation by private companies that were, you know, that were purchasing milk from farmers, and their interest was in stabilizing their prices. And I think that was a fairly common activity at that time.
Mm-hmm.
My personal background, I was owner and CEO of a for-profit organization. I am now the CEO of a nonprofit organization, and I can just say that it's a lot more satisfying, and the compensation really isn't that much different. So I think many times there's a concern that possibly compensation will be lower in a cooperative effort, and I would compare nonprofits with cooperatives. I think they have a lot of similarities. They're community-based and certainly very, very community-oriented and participatory. And it just makes me wonder, and this is really my question, in those states where the legal framework is not in place for cooperatives, would it be possible to organize a cooperative essentially under the nonprofit laws?
Rebecca?
What people do is organize, like in California, organize under as an LLC and then write up their bylaws to functionally make it a cooperative. So that's how people get around it. Most worker co-ops are for-profit businesses. Some are nonprofits. These co-op of co-ops type of organizations tend to be nonprofits, and so the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives, it's a member nonprofit, but the actual businesses are in business to, you know, they're in the world of commerce, and they're there to do business. So organizing as an LLC or another as a partnership, and then writing bylaws that make everyone an equal shareholder, that's how folks get around it.
What's an LLC?
A limited liability corporation.
Okay. And are there a lot of states that don't have a framework in place, a legal framework in place? Or
There are 13 states that don't have a legal framework for any kind of cooperative. And
really?
Many more that don't have for worker cooperatives, specifically for worker cooperatives. Yep.
Well, what are you doing about that?
Well, this law, the Cooperative Creation of Jobs through Cooperative Development Act, we're working on, and state by state, we're getting organized to lobby state houses to change their laws to allow for co-ops to incorporate as a co-op.
And the reason for opposition to this would be what, Rebecca?
Well, the ignorance, for one. I think that would be the main thing. There's a lot of pressure on the credit unions now. In fact, in Wisconsin, there's a piece of legislation that the Wisconsin Banking Association is trying to push through to hinder credit unions from doing what they fully can for their members.
Hmm.
They feel they have an unfair competitive advantage because of certain aspects of credit union law. So politically, the credit unions are under attack. For that reason.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk to you a little bit more, Gibson, about what's going on in Milwaukee. You mentioned a number of businesses that are members of the cooperative. I have read recently that there are certain kinds of industries that lend themselves well, that technology is growing, that healthcare is growing. Have you found that virtually any kind of business in River West could be a cooperative, or are there some that fit the framework much better than others?
I think businesses that are kind of existing neighborhood institutions or anchors are more likely to succeed if they choose to transform into cooperatives. It's hard for me to think of a business that you would not be able to have a cooperative model applied to.
Hmm.
However, it should be an intentional thing. Having a business idea, you should have a reason why you want to function as a cooperative and be willing to make those compromises and sacrifices that come with being a cooperative.
Mm-hmm. Same question to you, John.
Well, in Can you repeat the question?
I thought you were going to ask me that. Are there certain kinds of businesses that lend themselves well, or when you look at the Madison cooperatives, are they a certain kind of business? I guess the other way to frame the question is, could just about any business become a cooperative?
Yeah, if you look at Rebecca had mentioned the Mondragon Cooperative Corporation in Spain. And
right.
If you look at them, they're a great example of basically any type of business you can come up with, they're opening them up. So I haven't seen a limit. It's really only limited by the ability. You have to have a group of people to run it. And so if you don't have a group, then that limits it. But nothing is specific to the business. Right now we're trying to push for what's called transitioning businesses. So in communities, if there's a private business owner who's aging, doesn't have a family to turn the business over to, they can actually sell it to their workers as a cooperative, and then that private owner, and upon selling it, doesn't have to pay capital gains tax because they're doing it as a cooperative.
Uh-huh.
So we're really looking at any business that's willing to convert into a cooperative or open up as a cooperative, we'll take on helping develop it.
Hmm. Thanks, Wayne, so much for your call from San Francisco. Kevin in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for having this conversation. I'm a student of economics, and I'm also employed as a community organizer, so I'm very interested in cooperatives. And so we actually started, I've been involved in trying to put together a health insurance cooperative in Milwaukee, and that's more of a consumer cooperative, and I'm curious more about the worker cooperatives. I'm wondering how you guys get around getting kind of startup capital. Is it something that it's actually not that hard to get startup loans for like a small business, or it's banks kind of look at it differently than a small business? How do you guys get around that?
Good question. Lending is, and this goes back to Kathleen, what you were also asking about, what's stopping growth or slowing it down in the worker cooperatives. Funding is tough. It's very tough. Banks tend to get kind of wary in giving to brand new cooperatives because there's this group of people that are asking them for money, and they don't necessarily... But they're not comfortable with it. They're not familiar with the model. Credit unions are actually limited by federal law in the amount of lending that they can do to small businesses. So credit unions are capped out at 12.5% of their assets they can lend to small businesses. So credit unions are also capped out. Lending is very tough, and so what we're trying to do right now is kind of model after Mondragon as well. So all the cooperatives, they deal with their profits differently. They have to put certain percentages of their profits into a cooperative development fund, and that's what has been fueling the really massive growth of the Mondragon cooperatives. They're creating their own financing within the cooperative networks, which is why we believe the networking that's going on in Milwaukee and here and in the U.S., the federal level with Rebecca and the U.S. Federation is so important.
Yeah. That's what you're doing in Milwaukee, aren't you, Gibson, with your business? You have a pub, the profits are going, all the profits I read somewhere are going to the cooperative.
That's true. And it was quite intentional. That's why we started this tavern. It's the River West Public House Cooperative over on the east side. All of the profits from that are going to fund an umbrella co-op, the River West Cooperative Alliance. And the idea is to have our own autonomous way of raising capital.
Uh-huh.
So we're not dependent on banks. So we're not looking to people outside. So it's a way I think the neighborhood can actually sustain itself and support itself economically and without strings attached. And
mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah. Thank you so much, Kevin, for your call. Let's go to Scott next. Hi, Scott.
Hello there, Kathleen and Rebecca. Thank you both very much for the topic. My wife and I own a business, and we're just moving into a partnership right now, and I've long been concerned about the continuity of this company. It's technically a for-profit business, but it's more of a ministry, really developed that way over the many years we've had it. But with no family members to suitably inherit the business, we'd like to see it continue on. But with about 50 employees, it's grown quite a bit. And I am interested in the possibility of having it evolve toward like more of a cooperative. And so it would have to be like a hybrid as it goes along. And it's like, whoa, wow, there's all the problems that would involve, like The expense of the new evaluation of the business every time a new person wants to join in as a partner, and that it may be too expensive for employees who want to become equal partners, and maybe they would have to borrow money on their own to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens to those people as that happens, if they want to retire, including ourselves, as it goes along with And do we sell out to the other people? And then we're not much further ahead doing that. And
right.
Of course, all the employees would, if we're going to have this business, new employees or the current employees would have to agree with the vision of the ministry that we want to have continue on. But it seems there are a lot of problems, and it would take a lot of years for it to get toward a cooperative. I don't know if you can address any of those things to help me out on that.
Rebecca, can you address this?
Yeah. Thank you for your interest in this. And it's true. It does take, minimum 5 years to transition a business. So you're right, and you're very realistic in all of your concerns. And yet, if it works, it could turn out great, and it could enable you to perhaps even retire sooner than you thought. And there is one organization in the country that I would refer you to. It's the Ohio Employee Ownership Center, and they have done a lot of consulting and work in actually transforming businesses this way, and they will come out to you and, you know, do an analysis of your business and walk you through the steps of what it would take so you can make a really well-informed decision.
So that's Ohio Employee Ownership
Center. And their website is OEOCKENT.org. They're at Kent State University, so OEOCKENT.org.
Tremendous.
And I would highly recommend you contact them very soon.
Thank you so much for your help, Rebecca. God bless. Yep.
And also locally, there's the UW Center for Cooperatives does a lot of work. There's a couple of people that have a lot of got a lot of experience doing cooperative development. There's people here that will also be part of that process.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Scott. We'll take more calls in a moment. This hour, we've done several shows on places where workers are struggling, can't make a living on some of the wages that are being paid. We've contrasted that with other companies where people are doing very well, where the workplace takes human needs and family needs into consideration. And today we're doing something which was suggested by several of our listeners looking at a whole different way of organizing a workplace, and that's worker cooperatives. We have three guests with us, and we'll welcome more phone calls in a moment. The number 800-486-8655, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls, 800-486-8655. Veronica Rickard and Cynthia Schuster will explore the origins of Wisconsin's food traditions with the curator of an exhibit on our most iconic foods. That's after 3 today. Rod in Rusk County is our next caller, everybody. Hi, Rod.
Hello. Thank you. Yeah, I just, before I make my point, I was going to say my dad's not out to slay all Republicans, but he... actually did really like two couple of Republicans, but he said 1941, he farmed, dairy farmed, I grew up on a farm anyhow, in 1941, that rural electrification cooperatives were finally bringing electricity out to the country, rural areas, where the cities, probably Minneapolis, Chicago, Milwaukee, probably had them 20 years. Anyhow, he said the Republicans fought tooth and nail to eliminate the co-ops, and he said that capitalism was dead. That was in the 20s. Two Democrats from Wisconsin passed a law about the right for farmers to organize. My dad, he tells a lot of stuff. I can't remember it all. And that was what kind of instigated him in the 60s to be strong NFO, because what he was saying 40 years ago, that's exactly what we have. No big corporations, farms, because NFO was to try to organize the pay scales on a graduated scale. That way, the bigger you got, well, you'd make more money, sure, but it was on a graduated scale. It was like, if you knew anything about that. I have another question. I had a question. Tennessee Valley Authority or something?
TVA,
had something to do with the co-ops, too, if you can reflect on that, please.
Thank you, Rod. Thanks for bringing us into good territory here. Rebecca.
That's a stumper. I don't know anything about the TVA. But yeah, the electric co-ops, you reminded me that they made a really great little whiteboard video about how co-ops work and how electric co-ops work. I'll post it on Kathleen's Facebook page if you want to go see it.
Oh, great.
But I don't know anything about the TVA. Maybe Gibson or John do.
You know, I don't, but I think one thing, one interesting parallel here is how electric co-ops provided services not being met in rural communities in Wisconsin and across the country. There's a lot of needs not being met in urban communities, and increasingly so. And I think there's real opportunities for cooperative models to be applied to some more poverty-stricken areas in places where people aren't feeling empowered in Milwaukee.
We had a really fascinating show on cable television a couple days ago. I can't remember when. Days go so fast. But the guest, who was fabulous, was talking, was comparing the whole high-speed internet, which she really was pushing for, to electrification and that whole movement, and how incredibly political it was and how difficult it was. People thought, well, we don't need electricity. You know, hard to imagine now, but it was... That's a history, Rod, I'm glad you brought up, and I want to learn more about it. So maybe we should do a show on it. Mm-hmm. A couple of people were asking about Woodman's Grocery, which is employee-owned, and wondering, is that the same thing as a co-op?
No, it's an employee stock ownership program where employees can own certain numbers of stock in the business, but they don't democratically manage it, and it's not one member, one share of stock.
Okay. Let's go next to Kathleen in Greenville. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, and I hope you can hear me. I am a member of The Grange, and there's a national organization which was founded in 1867. And one of your speakers mentioned how the Norwegians were really big in promoting co-ops. And in Greenville, we have, it's called the South Greenville Grange. And we sponsored several co-ops, including your gas and oil would come from a co-op. And my parents always got dividend checks, and then people would take their corn or their products like that, and they would get them all ground at the co-op. And there might be a meat locker that you would have your meat processed at the co-op. So I don't know if any of your speakers know anything about the National Grange and their involvement in co-ops, but I know that they were part of what was in 1873 was considered the progressive movement. They were antitrust busters with the railroads to get their products shipped and that, which is a different issue. But I do know that the National Grange, and here in the state of Wisconsin, we've had a Grange since for like 140 some years. 1872, I think, was when the Wisconsin State Grange was founded. But one of the, there were seven founders of the Grange, and he was a guy named Oliver Hudson Kelly, who was from Minnesota. So one of the seven founders of the National Grange was right there from Minnesota.
So, Rebecca, are you familiar with this, or John?
I'm not familiar with it. I only know the Grange by name.
Rebecca?
But not with the particulars of the interaction between the Grange and the how co-ops started. But, you know, as Gibson just said, co-ops start to meet a need. And back in the progressive era, and in fact, the sort of what internationally what people recognize as the granddaddy of all of the co-op movement, the Rochdale co-ops in England, they arose against the sort of ravages of the Industrial Revolution and how prices, you know, the prices for labor were being depressed and prices for goods were increasing. And so folks in the rural England got together to make a cooperative store. And people all over the place, so including Wisconsin and Minnesota, the upper Midwest, in the mid to late 19th century, did the same things for to meet all of their needs. And so they were also, I want to mention that the worker cooperative movement, we don't see ourselves as just a discrete movement. We see ourselves as a small part of the labor movement. and that our relationships with unions are growing. And we have some very interesting experiments all over the country where between labor unions, the United Steelworkers and the United Food and Commercial Workers unions are helping to start new worker co-ops in areas where either shops are about to be shut down or around food hubs in Cincinnati. There's a big effort going on. The United Food and Commercial Workers are starting worker co-ops.
Hmm. So. We don't have any time left, but I do want to make sure that we have spared enough time to get more information on worker co-ops. Rebecca, you should go where?
usworker.coop for the U.S. Federation of Worker Co-ops, and John and Gibson can mention their websites.
All right. John?
MadWork has, you can go to Madison Worker Cooperatives.
Madison Worker Cooperatives.
Or I'm sorry, madwork.org is our website.
MadWorks.
W-R-C.
W-R-C.
Yeah. And then we also have a Facebook page for the Dane Cooperative Alliance, which you can just search that out on Facebook.
All right. And Gibson?
Sure. The best way to find out is to come wander around the River West neighborhood and stop in our co-ops and talk to people. Otherwise, you can go to riverwestpublichouse.org, and at the top of our page, there is a link to the information about the River West Cooperative Alliance.
Thank you all so much. Rebecca Kemble, thanks. And John Conwell. And Gibson Caldwell, thank you all very much. It was an interesting hour. And thanks to KP Whaley and Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program. Great conversations ahead. We'll be with you again tomorrow at, what time are we on now? 1 o'clock. Yeah, 1 o'clock tomorrow until 3. But stay with us. This is the Ideas Network.